samiritam nisamya veda eschida sanuvataha gambura vidyatam asotataiva matiram giram samadho gangane samihritam neshamya vedas chidasan uvachaha gam purusham me shvinutamara puna vidyatam asutataiva machiram Giram samado gangane samiritam Nisamya vedas chidasan uvachaha Gam paurusham me sinutamara puna Vidyatam asuta taiva matiram Giram samadho gangane samiritam Nasamya vedas chidasan uvachaha Kam paurusham me sinutamara puna Vidyatam asuta taiva machiram Ladies, Giram gangane samiritam Nisamya vedas chidasan uvachaha Kam paurusham me shinutamara puna Vidyatam asuta daiva machiram Giram, a vibration of words Samadho, in trance. Gangane, in the sky. Samiritam, vibrated. Nishamya, hearing. Vedaha, Lord Brahma. Chidasan, unto the demigods. Uvata, said. Ha, o, gam, the order. Paurushim, received from the Supreme Person. Me, from me. Shrinuta, just here. Amara, O demigods. Puna, again. Vidyatam, execute. Ashu, immediately. Tata eva, just so. Ma, do not. Chiram, delay. Translation. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Kshirodaksha Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively, without delay. Please repeat. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Kshirodakshay Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It appears that the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be heard in trance by competent persons. Modern science gives us telephones by which one can hear sound vibrations from a distant place. Similarly, although other persons cannot hear the words of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma is able to hear the Lord's words within himself. This is confirmed in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1, Tene Brahma Hrde Yadikavaye. Adikavi is Lord Brahma. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma received the instructions of Vedic knowledge from Lord Vishnu through the medium of the heart, Hrida. The same principle is confirmed herewith. While Lord Brahma was in trance, he was able to hear the words of Kshirodakshai Vishnu, and he carried the Lord's message to the demigods. Similarly, in the beginning, Brahma received the Vedic knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the core of the heart. In both instances, the same process was used in transmitting the message to Lord Brahma. In other words, although Lord Vishnu was invisible, even to Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma could hear Lord Vishnu's words through the heart. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is invisible, even to Lord Brahma, yet he descends on this earth and becomes visible to people in general. This is certainly an act of his causeless mercy. But fools and non-devotees think that Krishna is an ordinary, historical person. Because they think that the Lord is an ordinary person like them, they are described as mudha, avajananti mam mudha. The causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is neglected by such demoniac persons, and who cannot understand the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, and who therefore misinterpret them. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Agyanandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Geram Samadho Gangane Samiritam Nishamya Vedas Chidasanu Vachaha Gampurushim Me Shrinutamara Punar Vidiyatam Asu Tataiva Macharam. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Kshirodakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively, without delay. This verse kind of expresses why Lord Brahma is the Adi Guru of our Sampradaya. He's the first guru, the first spiritual master, because he can hear directly the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he explains those teachings to Narada Muni, Hari Hari Bo. So often, Srila Prabhupada would emphasize that we should read the first nine cantos before reading the tenth canto. And part of that science is inherent within this concept. If one simply goes to the tenth canto and doesn't understand how the second and third canto gave complete descriptions, very detailed descriptions of who Lord Brahma is, what his sojourn was, what qualified him to become to be able to hear the words of the Supreme Lord directly, then the faith, the understanding based on knowledge why one should listen to him would be less. If one has knowledge, then one's faith or one's understanding why I'm doing something becomes stronger, rather than just the sentiment that I think I'll do it. Because when obstacles come, when diversions come, when other opportunities may arise, one will easily be diverted unless they know exactly why they're doing, what they're doing, where they're trying to go. So in the second canto, there's a beautiful description of how, and third canto, both of them, how Lord Brahma became qualified to be able to hear directly from the Supreme Person. When he first appeared on the lotus flower as the first living being in the universe, all by himself on the top of the lotus flower, he was not a liberated soul. It's not that he just popped out and kind of understood where he was and who he was and kind of knew how to engineer the entire cosmic universe. He was bewildered, similar to us. When we're born, when a conditioned soul is born in this world, what's that verse? Om Agyana Timirandasya, born in the darkness of ignorance. We don't know how to speak. We don't know how to think. We come out of the womb completely ignorant of everything, except practically some instincts to remain alive by sucking some milk, or no real thought how to do that. And as we grow, the first attempts to acquire information are done through the senses. You can see that babies are always touching things with their mouths or looking indiscriminately at things around them, gathering knowledge through the knowledge acquiring senses. Problem is that the senses are imperfect. So this is called karnapattva. It's one of the four defects of a conditioned soul as opposed to a liberated soul. This is mentioned in the introduction to Sri Upanishad. What is the difference between a liberated soul and a conditioned soul? The difference is that the conditioned soul has four defects. The liberated soul doesn't have those defects. Similarly, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes... Brahma pramada viparlipsa karna patva isvarera vaki nahi dosha e sabha. The material defects of mistakes, illusion, cheating, and sensory inefficiency do not exist in the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just prior, a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing the questions of Maharaj Parikshit, specifically pertaining to the advent of Lord Krishna, which is where we are now, and we're discussing this. So at the end of all these different descriptions of a dynasty of Yadu, coming up to the into the advent of Krishna, Maharaj Parikshit was asking, Mukundo Bhagavan, please narrate the pastimes of Mukundo Bhagavan. Those of you who are here regularly may remember. And we discussed how Mukundo Bhagavan is that person who is beyond this conditioned universe. He's the supreme person, completely liberated and free, and as Srila Prabhupada mentioned in today's purport, he comes into this world. When he comes here, or when he transmits information, the information from outside this universe isn't contaminated with these four defects. Another aspect we read about, and the reason I want to discuss this a little bit in detail, is because if we understand the mechanics of how material nature has conditioned us, then it gives us a better map and a better understanding how to free ourselves from that conditioning. So we read about two different aspects of Maya. One is called Prakshepatmika. I always remember the P means pushing. Prakshepatmika means that when the living entity has a desire separate than serving Krishna, he's pushed, prakshepatmika, pushed into a situation. The next mechanical arrangement by Maya is avaranatmika. He becomes covered. So he becomes pushed into a situation and he becomes covered to accept that as okay, satisfied to be in this situation. And the example in the purport that we read was even a worm in stool, or an ant, or a mosquito, or a human being, becomes satisfied. As I was preparing to give this class, I was realizing that this defect not only affects us on a kind of big scale, as I was just describing, but even in our minds, what happens, and we see it, you can see it right in front of you every day. Even in a spiritual society where there are different subtleties to philosophy, people get pushed into a belief and covered to accept that belief as true. And one person or one group of people have a particular belief, and Prakshipatmika covers them, and they think, yes, this Ritvik system is good, whereas another group reads the exact same words, has the exact same books, has the exact same culture of chanting and worshiping deities, and they get pushed and believe by their modes of nature and their hearing that no, this Ritvik system isn't. So the question arises, how does one distinguish between what is reality, what is without any defect, what is pure, absolute truth? Truth exists. For example, the creation happened. It happened somehow, and it doesn't really affect how it happened, how you think about it. You may think it happened in a certain way, but that has no bearing on what actually happened. It happened, and how you think about it doesn't really affect how it happened. You may believe that it was a big bang, and it was a group of chemicals that were a mush, and gradually evolved into higher and higher life forms, and the theory of evolution brought us to where we are today. Or you may believe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over material energy and infused it with spirit, and that Lord Brahma was born as the first living being, and that he created the cosmos under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are very opposing concepts. One might be a reality, one may not. They might both be wrong. But the creation happened the way it happened. So truth exists. The question is, how do we get to the truth? How does one find the truth? The instruments which we have to acquire knowledge, anyone can understand, are imperfect. Our senses cannot gather perfect information. Everybody has had the experience of Brahma, not B-R-A-H-M-A, as in Lord Brahma, who we're speaking about today, but B-H-R-A-M-A, Brahma. It means a mistake. Conditioned souls make mistakes. To err is human. So it's a natural, inherent characteristic that we are going to make mistakes. Another one is pramada. It's an illusion. Everyone, from Lord Brahma down to the ant, thinks, I am this body. Prakshepatmika pushed us into a body, and Avaranatmika covers us so that we identify with this body. And it's a hunkar mixed with the modes of material nature which bind us into this concept. So we go through life completely satisfied, thinking that we're living in reality, when in actuality, we may not be. It might be a complete illusion that I'm this body and that the things belonging to this body are mine and that my relatives are my well-wishers and my best friends and that my bank balance is going to bring me happiness and that my job is really one of the most important things in my life. This is a whole, and what happens is that due to cultures and civilizations, groups of people get together and reinforce one another with this belief system. There's one time I was in Bombay when Bhakti Swarup Damodar had his Bhaktivedanta Institute programs, and they invited all kinds of scientists from around the world, and everyone gave their presentation. And the program itself revealed the dichotomy of the two belief systems. But I think every one of us can understand that if we sat down with a group of scientists that had been studying how the theory of evolution is a reality and how molecular chemicals and molecular matter have evolved throughout history, even with our strong belief, with our whole context of information, it's not that you can just convince somebody of your view of reality. They don't accept because they're so conditioned due to this strong over and over again. Everybody knows the history of Pavlov's dogs. Pavlov's dogs. He was a scientist, for those who may not know, the young people. Pavlov had a bunch of dogs, and scientist Pavlov would ring a bell, and then he would feed the dog. The next day, he would ring the bell, and he would feed his dogs. The next day, he would ring the bell, and he would feed his dogs. And he was doing an experiment. The next day, he rang the bell, and he watched to see what the dogs would do. And they wagged their tails, their tongues started to salivate, they started to get hungry, they came up like they were going to get some food because they heard the bell. This is called conditioned. They became conditioned by the action and the response, the action and the response, the action and the response, and this binds very, very tightly. So even in our belief system, we think something, we accept it, we believe it, we act on it, and it becomes tighter and tighter and tighter as we go through life believing this. So, in this circumstance, there are hundreds and thousands of phalanxes of demoniac military strength on the earth. And this burden has caused great disturbance to Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, the different demigods are without a solution. How can we get freed from this burden? Where is their relief? Who can we go to? These people are so strong, we can't defeat them. We need superior power in order to defeat these demons, in order to relieve us of our distress. So similarly, the human being who inquires, Atato Brahma Jignasa, how did I get here? Who am I? How do I become freed from this burden and binding knots which have tied me into the illusion? Where do I find relief? Who has the answers? So they've all gone to the ocean of milk. There's a beautiful description by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book, which kind of summarizes this in a little bit different way. After all the demigods offered the Purusha Shukta prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently heard no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Lord Brahma. Does anyone know the eightfold yoga process? Pranayama. Right. So, let's just follow the mechanics of that. Thank you. Na, yama and niyama. Things to do, things not to do. How to act so that consciousness becomes a little bit elevated, one becomes pious, one gets some intelligence. Asana. Sit down. Be quiet. Pranayama. Begin to breathe. And focus one's meditation and attention on something other than the outside sensual perceptions. It's called pratyahara. One brings the consciousness in. Dharana means one starts to meditate. One starts to think of a particular object or activity. Dhyana means it becomes more solidified. And finally, samadhi. So Lord Brahma, out of all the different people in the universe, he has this science so perfectly expert. He has it mastered. He's a master yogi. He can sit in meditation. Sometimes when we read a story, it's like 100 years goes by in a sentence. Right? All of a sudden you're at the result. So we'll talk a little more about how Lord Brahma got to this point, but it's not that everybody went to the ocean of milk, they offered a few prayers, kind of sat for a few minutes, wait, didn't hear anything, and Lord Brahma sat down and, like, you know, dialed S-A-M-A-D-H-I. It didn't happen quite that quickly. On his cell phone, he can't just... Lord Vishnu. He sat in meditation. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigods. This is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hrida, the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, in the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Lord Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was, to be continued later, because that's someone else's class. But this is how Vedic knowledge is transmitted. Here's what Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur says about the verse that we're reading today. The verse again. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Shirodakshaya Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively, without delay. Commentary. Gangane means the sky. Lord Brahma did not directly see or meet Lord Vishnu. In the trance of meditation, Samadhu, Brahma heard a voice in the sky. From this one can understand that to see Vishnu directly is difficult, even for Brahma. Thus when Krishna, the origin of Vishnu, shows himself directly to all men who appear on earth, when he appears on earth, it is a display of extraordinary mercy, not available at any other time. Gam Purushim means the words of Shirodakshaya Vishnu, the Supreme Purusha. So, Sukadev Goswami is continuing to reel in his hearer's interest by describing how this person, who even Lord Brahma, who's the supreme person in the universe, he can't see him. But that person, his origin, will descend into the material world. A little bit more on Lord Brahma, and then we'll... on his original situation. Again, going back to that concept that when you tell a story or when you... here's a nice example. When a group, like we just heard that Bhakti Marg is coming to town, and Bhakti Marg Swami will prepare, he'll audition with many different people, and then they'll sit down and they'll go over the script and he'll direct and they'll practice. And they'll go out and they'll perform so many different things and they'll practice and they'll fine-tune. When they come back here to Alachua the day before Janmashtami and perform, what we will see is the result of all that work. We just see the play. And we don't really understand all the work that went on behind it. So, what we're hearing here now is Lord Brahma's with all the demigods and he is there at the ocean of milk. And he's meditating and hearing from Vishnu. But there's a whole history of how Lord Brahma got to the point where he's able to do that. Again, when he first appeared in the lotus flower, all by himself in the middle of this gigantic universe, Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. He heard the transcendental vibration from the sky, and he accepted it as divine. It's described in that second and third canto, also in Brahma Samhita, that when Lord Brahma was born, he appeared in the lotus flower all by himself, middle of empty space, no other people, no planets, just sitting on a lotus flower, and he heard from nearby the female voice of Mother Saraswati, the transcendental goddess of learning. Tapa. Tapa, twice, bas. That's all he heard. Tapa means perform penances, perform austerity. This is the root of how to become freed from that binding knot. It's what life is actually meant for in the human form of life. Human life is meant for tapasya. We don't like to hear that. It's not a comfortable concept that life is meant for tapasya, but nonetheless, that's the teachings. Thus he controlled his mind and senses And the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities, and therefore he's known as the greatest of ascetics. Purport. Lord Brahma heard the occult sound, tapa, but he did not see the person who vibrated that sound. Still, he accepted the instruction as beneficial for him, and therefore he engaged himself in meditation for 1,000 celestial years. One celestial year equals 6 times 30. Any good mathematicians here? 6 times 30? Like, 6 times 30 is probably 1,800. Times 12, times 1,000 of our years. His acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord, and due to his correct vision, he made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instructions. There is no difference between the Lord and the sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is the living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. It's a very important topic and point. The potency of the transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently not present or absent. Does that mean Srila Prabhupada is present in his books? Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or any revealed scripture in this world is never to be accepted as ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. So, if Lord Brahma sat down and did yoga, but when Krishna instructed Arjuna to do the same thing, go to a secluded place, sit down on a deer skin, quiet the mind, do pratyahara, pranayama, dharana, dhyana, and finally you'll come to samadhi. Arjuna said, my dear Lord, sounds too difficult. My mind's more difficult to control than the wind. How can I possibly think of doing that? So, naturally we have to, and everybody knows where we're going with this, how do we apply the process of capturing the mind and condensing it and focusing it in this age? As we know, Lord Chaitanya instructed Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami were followers of him in the Sampradaya, and Srila Prabhupada's purport to Rupa Goswami's verse, text number 8, the essence of all instruction. In the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna Katha. This is called Shravana Das, the stage of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing of his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can attain to the stage of acceptance called Varna Das. When one attains this stage, he becomes attached to hearing Krishna Katha. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, he attains the stage of Smarnavastha, the stage of remembering. Recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smaranam. So, that sounds very familiar with what we just heard in the mechanics of yoga. Recollection, absorption, meditation, and constant remembrance. Pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. It's a progressive method of bringing the mind under control and focusing on one point or one person. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later, remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it is concentrated and is called meditation. So, it gives us a good instructions. What is meditation? Meditation. Oh, I'm meditating on my rounds. I'm meditating on Krishna. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. Uninterrupted. We have to practice. That's the penance. That's the austerity. It's not that we have to not eat or that we have to not breathe or that we have to sit in a strange, difficult pose, or that we have to hold our breath. The practice, the penance, is pay attention to your rounds. Pay attention to class. Pay attention when you read. This is our penance. This is our austerity. And by gradually performing this penance, one becomes more adept. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi, or spiritual trance. After smaranadas, or samadhi, has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original, constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. That is called sampatidas, the perfection of life. So it's a progressive, gradual path. We can see from Lord Brahma's example, 1,000 celestial years, that we've got some time that it may take, but we have to remain enthusiastic, determined, patient, utsahan nistaya daryat, and apply ourselves. It should become, if you apply the process, we can see, why are people still doing this 40 years after they began? Because there's some pleasure there. It's not just all difficult and grinding one's head against the stone. But ultimately, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satatu yuktanam, vajatam pratipurvagam, dadami buddhi yogam, tam jena mama payantite. He gives the intelligence and encourages one from within the heart. We can also experience the Lord within the heart, the message, the encouragement, the enthusiasm. Association of devotees also helps cultivate that. And thus, this whole culture of Krishna consciousness is meant to bring us out of that darkness of the bondage, of the four defects, of the prakshepatmika, of an avaranatmika tendencies. Another nice one that I didn't mention that I should is that these are not kind of different categories that don't interrelate. For example, if someone, a good one is men. Men hate to ask directions when they're driving someplace. So, what they do is they get covered by the illusion of where they're going and make a mistake. And then they get covered by the prakshipatmika and become satisfied that they know where they're going. And then they use vipralipsa, the cheating propensity, to try and put it on to the other people in the car that I know I'm going. It's just an example of how the cheating propensity mixed with the illusion and the making mistakes are all interrelated. So our process is just stop and ask directions. If you find someone who knows, then they can tell you. That's the process. Srila Prabhupada is a member of the Sampradaya, coming directly from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma can hear exactly what Krishna is saying. He sees Krishna in meditation. He tells Narada. Narada tells Vyas. Vyas tells Madhva. Madhva tells these Bharapuri, Madhavendrapuri, six Goswamis, Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, and to us. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Verse again. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Shirodakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively, without delay. Pundarik Prabhu.
Two questions came up in my mind. That Lord Brahma, he didn't directly see Lord Vishnu, that when they, so why, he got knowledge through samadhi like that. Why they went to the ocean of milk in order to go through that process. Other question is that you read some quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the words of the Supreme Lord have no and none of the four defects. The question would be why Krishna had Arjuna declare it boldly that this, he requested Arjuna to declare it boldly that my devotees never perish.
First one is that there's procedure, process, to approach the Lord. Rather than sitting in his own abode, I guess it's it could be maybe etiquette. You go to the person rather than having the person come to you. You're going for help. We'll go to the ocean of milk. He's out in the island. We'll pray to him. Rather than, okay, Bhumi, I'm going back to the meditation room. I'll get the message and come back and tell you. No, they all went together. There was solidarity. There was association. There was a sangha. They came together. It's a plea. They're in a humbled position. Pardon? Like a pilgrimage, exactly. They're together, but they're also in a helpless condition. They're asking for help, so they're going together to create that one possible answer. As far as Krishna telling Arjuna to declare it boldly, my understanding would be that Krishna sometimes has a reputation of dancing with others' wives or stealing. And someone may take that why trust his word? But one thing he doesn't have a reputation for is not upholding his devotees' word or not taking care of his devotees. No one can claim or cite a circumstance where Krishna doesn't back his devotee. You may say he steals. You may say he dances with other wives. You may say he told Yudhisthira to lie. These things are there. You may say he took a vow on the battlefield to not fight, but he picked up the wheel and he went for Bhishma. But why did he do it? To save his devotee. He'll always save his devotee. So that's to enhance that quality of his nature.
That we should listen to his words in the scriptures, but
scriptures another thing.
Scriptures
and also we don't receive it directly from him; we receive it from his devotee. Samapriya.
Just in response to that last question by Pundarik, what makes us think that Krishna is ruled by our moral system? We're the conditioned ones. Krishna comes here out of his mercy to display his pastimes, but he is not controlled by anything in this material world other than his devotees' love. So one might say that, so Krishna said on the battlefield
to
Arjuna.
But what does that have to do with his question?
Well, he said that, he asked.
He said, why should we accept the scriptures?
No, the other one about Arjuna.
Yeah. He's saying, why should we accept the scriptures as freed from this when he's telling Arjuna, you declare it boldly? Aren't you saying that? Right.
Well, because Krishna is he's not controlled by our ignorance. You see, he's coming in. He's not controlled by our small moral system. So therefore, one might say, well, he's immoral because he's dancing with others' wives. But this is our lack of understanding the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Okay. Mahaprabhu? For the benefit of everyone.
If I remember correctly, when Prabhupada commented on this, he also said, not everyone or some may not believe Krishna. So that's their problem. If they don't believe it. You know, they may not, you know, Krishna's saying, they may not believe me. You know, I know what's going on out there. So not everyone will believe me for reasons you've discussed or whatever. Mm. So you could say that's just Krishna making sure the point gets across. So in other words, I'm saying it and it is true. But some people are going to think it's what I say can't be taken because I'm crooked. Can't be taken at face value.
So let my devotees. Also.
Yeah, you say it. So if you say it, everyone will believe it. If I say it, some people won't believe it. So it's just a more effective way of communication. Yeah. The other question that you were asking, it seems what you're implying is that when they went to the milk ocean, they weren't expecting a direct answer. They were expecting it communicated telepathically or some way. And it seemed, Oh, why do they have to? Because I always thought, well, they're going there to speak to him directly, you know, like, you know, let's make sure we get it correct here. We'll hear it right from him directly.
He's everywhere, but he's also on the Sweta Dweep as Shirodaksha Vishnu.
It seems like you're saying it's also, it seems to be a common thing whenever there's a problem.
Watch any Hindi movie.
The committee.
About an incarnation. It already starts with a, yeah, you know, everybody going go to there. The ocean of milk.
Yeah, it seems Mahabodhi to be
Prabhu?
It's interesting to, you know, with the information that we have, to realize that Krishna comes once in the day of Brahma to reiterate what he told Brahma at the Shirodakshaya ocean as Lord Krishna, and then again as Lord Chaitanya. So he's coming to reiterate what he's told somebody. And if a person is not going to believe that that they're getting information through the heart of another person as the verbatim, you know, Vedas, or the word of God, then he comes again as himself and reiterates these.
Also, as that knowledge becomes disseminated throughout the universe and throughout time, it becomes degraded and lost because of these modes of nature and the imperfections. It all sort of filters in. So there's a periodic need for reestablishing it as it is. Stita D, Prabhu?
Hey, when we're talking about like Lord Brahma, you know, descriptions of Lord Brahma creating, and then we're comparing them, you know, to things that pass for knowledge now as far as natural science goes, the thought that I could sit here and scripturally analyze the experience of the class you just gave in terms of the sound, spiritual sound vibration, or I could be some material science and come in scientist who's an atheist, let's say. Nerve impulses, atoms in motion, and electricity going through the microphone. So in one sense, both descriptions are true, but then not that they're necessarily I'm endorsing modern scientific descriptions, because empiricism is always limited and relative. But on one level of relativity, both descriptions are true, but the problem, I'm looking for confirmation, but the problem with that description, that relative description, is they imagine it's absolute, or they convince everybody else relative perception is absolute at the expense of perhaps more.
Both are true up to a certain point, but
of course.
But what they don't accept is that the actual self, which is propelling and starting the matter in motion, is a spiritual being. And if we take the opposite concept, that it's just a conglomeration of nerves and electrical impulses and chemicals, then the idea that life is meant for tapasya, that we should control our senses, that we're going to suffer if we do things wrong and prosper if we do things right, doesn't come into play, and atheism becomes more prominent when there's no acknowledgement of that spiritual entity.
Yeah, so I guess then, not that, you know, everything's a relative experience here. You know, perception is limited. That was Prabhupada's foundational criticism. But then I guess it's the meaning they project upon their conditional perceptions. Oh, I'm perceiving this. That means something that, of you know, that's beyond sensual confirmation. I mean, their descriptions may have some relative value. But
certainly.
That's all it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Mahatma Prabhu?
It also seems that the paradigm of empiricism is that this is the latest research. And this is all we know about it.
Right.
And we know you don't know more than we do because we're in the laboratory.
And a few years from now, we'll come out with a new volume.
And it doesn't matter because the latest breaking news. This is what's happening now.
Right.
We just discovered everything that we thought we knew was wrong. But that's fine. That's just the process of knowledge. It just goes on that way. And be satisfied with what we perceive now.
Prakshepatmika.
Because otherwise we have to become religious people and have faith in, you know, fairy tales. Yeah, and we'd be out of a job also.
Yeah, that grant.
we're talking about a belief in, you know, I found this, therefore it must mean I'm that much closer to, you know, but who knows? Who can confirm that? You can't scientifically. So there's this idea of, I mean, some guy could be an auto mechanic and have the same mentality. You know, I just sure. fixed a Porsche. Geez, I'm that much closer to becoming God, you know?
Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Brahma ki jai.